Brook, the State of Alaska, is now in session. The Honorable William Morse presiding.
Be seated, please. All right, good morning. We're on the record, State versus Hague, 3KN-10-01295. Counsel for the State and Mr. Hague are present. We are here on an evidentiary hearing on a remand from the Court of Appeals on five topics. I'm only going to be ruling on the five topics, but I understand, Mr. Hague, that you want to expand the subject matter of the hearing. I'm not going to rule on those things, but I am going to give you an opportunity to present that additional information. So you can present the information on the other topics that you want to present, and that will preserve your record so that the Court of Appeals can review it and decide whether or not that is something that either the Superior Court or the Court of Appeals should address. So I'll give you the ability during the next 2 days to put on whatever testimony you want regarding whatever you think is pertinent to your appeal.
Okay.
Okay. So are you ready to proceed?
Yes.
Call your first witness.
And, Your Honor, I will be invoking Rule 615, exclusionary rule. His witnesses.
Do you have witnesses in the courtroom that you intend to call?
I believe there are. There's Mr. Cole there and Mr. Zellers. I don't know where he's at. The first witness that I'd like to call, though, is Mr. Robinson, and I don't know if he's here yet. Has Mr. Robinson put in an appearance?
I don't see him.
I have a subpoena for him. Yep,
did you serve him?
30 this morning.
All right. Well, hopefully he will be here. If he's not here now, then call an additional witness. We'll look into, I'll give him time to be here. That's snowing out there. Maybe he's delayed from coming up from Kenai or Sedona.
Okay. But and there's just a couple things that I would like to.
So you said that there's two witnesses, Mr. Cole and someone else?
Mr. Cole needs to be, I guess, outside. And
who are you going to call first?
Mr. Zellers. I'll probably call Mr. Cole first if Chuck Robinson isn't here. But before I do, I would just like to go over just for a few minutes what I've kind of, I basically.
Just let's
keep
do one,
Mr. Hague, one thing at a time.
One thing at a time. So if you're going to call Mr. Cole first and have Mr. Zeller step out. He can wait outside in the hallway.
Okay. And
if there are other witnesses you intend to call.
My wife, Jackie. So
then have her step outside, too.
Mr. Robinson is not out front, Your Honor.
Okay. Is not?
Is not. Well, there's nobody out front.
Okay.
But the subpoena said courtroom 601, so it's possible he's at 601.
We'll see if he's up there. He's
okay. And I apologize. I'm not in it.
They've sent everybody that's shown up at 601 has been sent down here, but they're checking right now for Mr. Robinson.
And the clerk said no one is outside courtroom 601.
Okay. So go ahead, Mr. Hague.
Because I'm kind of confused about this, whatever, I was wondering, I'm going to call myself as a witness, but I assume I can be here because...
You can be here.
Okay. And can I be sworn in now? So that kind of as I go along, it's kind of test...
Now, when you testify, you'll be up in the witness stand like everybody else, and you'll testify from the witness stand.
Okay. Well, I'd just like to stay right here. I swear to tell the truth right now. The first thing is I've got a... 300 more pages, or 155 additional pages of a petition, of petition signatures for a grand jury investigation. And I don't know who to give them to, because I gave the last bunch to Your Honor, and you gave them to the Deputy Attorney General, Robert Henderson, and he stated he isn't going to give it to a grand jury. And so I would like to give these to you so that we have additional ones. Can I?
You bring them up. You can just give them to the clerk. We'll stamp the package as Exhibit 1.
And, again, it's 145 pages of signatures. We're calling for a grand jury investigation.
This hearing will prove why a grand jury investigation is so important to the petitioners and why
Immediately after this hearing is concluded, I'm asking everyone to join me in walking over to the governor's office to hand him a copy of the petition and ask he support Senate Bill 15, which Senator Peter Michicki has introduced and would require public petitions for a grand jury investigation to actually be given to a grand jury. I quote Your Honor's final statement in your October 8, 2018 calendaring order. The court again emphasizes that Hegg may only present testimony on the five topics identified by the Court of Appeals. Should he attempt to present evidence on the other topics, he will be cutting into the time allotted to the five permissible topics. I now quote Amadon versus State 604 P2D 575, Alaska, 1979. Failure to object to an error during the proceedings is deemed to be a waiver of the error. If I conduct this proceeding without objecting, I waive my right to object that the Court of Appeals lied and committed fraud to limit this hearing to only five topics, and if followed blindly, will strip me of my ability to prove the true extent of the corruption and cover-up in this case. So I am now going to object to the errors in these proceedings. On page 46 of its order, the Court of Appeals states that because I never provided them any briefing, specifics, or support, I cannot present evidence that the Alaska Commission on Judicial Conduct is corrupt, that Prosecutor Scott Leaders is corrupt, or that the attorneys in my case are corrupt. On page 44 of the Court of Appeals order, they ordered that I can present evidence that Attorney Robinson was ineffective for not protesting, quote, the apparent factual inaccuracies presented at sentencing, unquote. I carefully went over my briefing and found I had given the Court of Appeals 54 pages of briefing that detailed the specific how, why, and when, and where of the corruption of the Commission on Judicial Conduct and its sole investigator for the past 30 years, Attorney Marla Greenstein. This 54 pages did not include the physical evidence I also provided the Court of Appeals. One, copies of Greenstein's written certification confirming that she contacted and took testimony from specific witnesses during her official ACJC investigation of Judge Margaret Murphy, who is my trial judge. Two, affidavits from the same exact witnesses that Greenstein certified to have contacted, all swearing under oath that Greenstein never contacted them and had, in fact, falsified the testimony they would have given had they been contacted. Three, an affidavit Judge Murphy falsified to cover up her corruption during my trial. Four, 77 pages of recordings and transcriptions put together and certified as true by Superior Court Judge Stephanie Joannides, independently proving that Greenstein falsified an official ACJC investigation to cover up that Judge Murphy was chauffeured full-time during my trial by the main witness against me, Trooper Brett Gibbons, and that Judge Murphy removed the evidence that would have exonerated me out of the official court record before my jury could see it. 25 pages of my briefing to the Court of Appeals detailed the specific how, why, where, and when of Prosecutor Scott Leader's corruption. This 25 pages did not include the physical evidence I also provided the Court of Appeals. One, a copy of the map Prosecutor Leaders and Trooper Gibbons used to convict me at jury trial. Two, tape recordings and transcriptions of Prosecutor Leaders and Trooper Gibbons discussing before trial how they had falsified the map to support their case against me. Three, a copy of a sworn affidavit that Prosecutor Leaders falsified to cover up his corruption. And four, copies of official discovery requests that Prosecutor Leaders violated to keep his corruption covered up. Additional proof that I gave the Court of Appeals details and evidence of Prosecutor Leaders' corruption is my videotaped oral arguments to the Court of Appeals that records me showing them the actual map used against me at trial, showing them how the map had been falsified to support Prosecutor Leaders' case against me, and explaining to them how Prosecutor Leaders and Trooper Gibbons tape recorded themselves discussing how they had falsified the map so it supported their case against me, and explaining to them that Prosecutor Leaders never gave me a copy of the map or a copy of the tape recording prior to trial as required by pretrial discovery requests to Leaders. 38 pages of my briefing to the Court of Appeals detailed the how, why, where, and when of my own attorney's corruption. This 38 pages didn't include the physical evidence I provided the Court of Appeals, tape recordings and transcriptions of my own attorney's sworn testimony that government officials, and that includes Mr. Cole here, would harm them if they tried to protect me from prosecutor leaders' corruption. On the allowed issue of Robinson not protesting, quote, the apparent factual inaccuracies presented at sentencing, unquote, I could not find a single word of briefing, detail, or evidence given to the Court of Appeals. So the Court of Appeals has ruled that issues of national importance, which received hundreds of pages of briefing and evidence, were not briefed well enough for an evidentiary hearing, while an issue of near zero importance, which received not a single word of briefing or evidence, was briefed well enough for an evidentiary hearing. On pages 42 and 43, the Court of Appeals states that because Cole and I, Mr. Cole right here, were immersed in a contentious fee arbitration at the time of my sentencing, I cannot present evidence that Robinson should have enforced Cole's subpoena to appear at my sentencing and testify that prosecutor leaders broke my plea agreement after I had given up a year of guiding and reliance on it. Yet my date-stamped fee arbitration application proves I filed for free arbitration against Cole 5 months after I was sentenced. The significance of this is that had Cole testified at sentencing that I had given up a year of guiding for a plea agreement with minor charges, it would have proved my prosecution and end conviction on far more serious charges was invalid. Here are the date-stamped copies of my fee arbitration application and sentencing judgment proving beyond doubt the Court of Appeals lied when they ruled I was engaged or immersed in a contentious fee arbitration with Cole at the time of my sentencing. And I'd like to hand Your Honor the date-stamped copies of my application to the Bar Association for Fee Arbitration and the date-stamped copy of when I was sentenced. Can I hand these in? And I got a copy for the state also, if they would like one.
Give the state a copy. What I'd like you to do is, how many pages are there?
Two.
All right, so we'll make that exhibit in next in line, but I'd like them stapled so that they don't get misplaced. Is that exhibit two?
Okay. And that your copy may have more. It had also, I think, the Court of Appeals ruling statement on it.
Exhibit you've just given me is the two filing pages as well as some excerpts from the Court of Appeals?
Correct.
All right, just make sure those are stapled all together.
On page 42, the Court of Appeals states that because there is no evidence in the record, I cannot present any evidence I was given transactional immunity. Yet on February 7, 2012, my attorney, Brent Cole, who was deposed in this case, testified under oath on the record that I was given transactional immunity. Attorney Kevin Fitzgerald, who worked with Cole during my prosecution, also testified that prosecutor leaders gave me transactional immunity. Fitzgerald then testified that after I gave the statement required by the immunity, prosecutor leaders flat stated he would not be honoring my immunity. This testimony is also part of the record of this case. Judge Carl Bauman wrote in the record of this case, page 12 on 7-23-12, quote, a rogue or unauthorized offer of immunity is possible. The significance of this is that transactional immunity prevents prosecution for anything talked about during the required statement, and I was prosecuted for everything I talked about during my statement. Even more unbelievable is that part of my statement was used as evidence against me at trial. It is clear the Court of Appeals lied when they claimed there was no evidence in the record that I was given transactional immunity. On page 49, the Court of Appeals states, I cannot present evidence of Judge Bauman's corruption because I didn't point to anything other than Judge Bauman's adverse rulings to show he was corrupt. I quote my opening brief to the Court of Appeals. Quote, Bauman, in violation of AS 22.10.190, which required him to file affidavits, nothing presented to him was undecided for more than 6 months, failed to decide many of Hegg's motions within 6 months, such as Hegg's 110-11 motion for hearing and rulings before deciding state's motion to dismiss, decided by Bauman on 117-12 or over a year later. Hegg filed criminal and ACJC complaint against Bauman for perjury and asked Bauman be disqualified for corruption. Record 02179-2203. Troopers dismissed criminal complaint, Greenstein dismissed ACJC complaint, and Kenai Judge Anna Moran refused to disqualify Bauman. In another part to the Court of Appeals, I wrote this. Bauman is corrupt, including but not limited to A, falsifying six-month affidavits to starve Hegg out, B, delaying PCR decision for 3 years to starve Hegg out, C, predating decisions to corruptly make it appear they had been made within the six-month time limit, D, corruptly dismissing Hegg's claim, supported by Judge Joni's certified evidence of Greenstein Murphy's corruption. There's some other stuff I go on there, but here are the copies of Judge Bauman's orders and Judge Bauman's pay affidavits proving he committed perjury when he filed them. And it includes my complaints against him, which are all part of the record, and I'd like to hand these in also.
Just to be clear, are these documents already part of the record?
I believe so. I believe they are, but I don't know.
I'll let you
because
I will let you resubmit them.
Okay.
But again, staple them all together so that we have the packet that you want us to look at.
And I appreciate you letting me do this because it's been tearing my life apart. So, again, thank you, Your Honor.
I have a question. Why didn't you appeal all of the multitude of errors you believe the Court of Appeals made to the Supreme Court?
I did. I appealed to the Alaska Supreme Court.
Right.
One word they said denied. We're not even going to look at it. And again, that makes me very angry because I had absolute proof the Court of Appeals lied.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Keep
okay. And I understand. It is clear the Court of Appeals lied when they ruled I did nothing more than point to Judge Bauman's adverse orders to show he was corrupt. Now that I have shown why I believe the Court of Appeals order limiting this hearing to five issues is a product of provable lies and fraud, and I believe intended to protect the judges, prosecutors, troopers, and attorneys in this case, I will proceed to prove the issues they have allowed me. And I have here, I was going to call Chuck Robinson as my first witness, but Mr. Cole, I guess, is first one. And can he be sworn in?
Come on up to the witness stand, please.
Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear from the testimony you'll give now before the court will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Thank you. You may be seated. And for the record, please state your name, spelling both first and last name.
My name is Brent, B-R-E-N-T, Cole, C-O-L-E.
Thank you.
You may proceed, Mr. Hague. Go ahead.
Is it true you represented me from April of 2004 to December of 2004?
That's vaguely the amount of time that I represented you, yes.
Okay. And I'm not an attorney, so please give me some leeway. There's some testimony in another proceeding that I would just like to go over, and what I'd like to do, I guess, is give Mr. Cole a copy of it, and I'll read another copy and have him basically affirm or deny that this was a correct.
That's fine.
Okay. And can I walk up and give this to him?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Cole.
Can I read this real quick?
Sure.
It'll speed things up. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm just going to start reading, and if anything...
Mr. Hager, just for my provided context, what is it that you're reading from?
It is a transcription of the testimony Mr. Cole gave during fee arbitration test that I filed.
So there was a fee arbitration hearing in front of the Bar Association. He gave testimony, and that's what you're reading
Foreign
from?
Foreign testimony.
Sure,
yes.
Go ahead.
Okay, and it was on 7-12-06. The person chairing it was Nancy Shaw, Attorney Nancy Shaw. I don't know if you know her, but she was the person running it. But anyway, Mrs. Shaw states, Mr. Cole is the only one who needs to be sworn in right now, and he has been. You're still under oath, Mr. Cole. I say, and I'll just say Hague, I'd asked you yesterday about why I didn't want the motion to enforce the agreement moved forward. And I believe you said it was because I did not want to risk a 5-year suspension of my guide license. Is that correct? Mr. Cole states, we talked about this on several occasions. I explained to you that it would be against my advice to have you file that motion because, again, I could not understand how it would benefit you. All it did is get us back in front of the judge open sentencing, which I did not understand. I put it to you several times. I went back and reviewed the tapes that you made without telling me of conversations we had on the 10th and on the 22nd, which they now have transcripts of it. Specifically, I asked you in one of those, do you want me to file this? Mr. Hague responds, and what did I respond? Mr. Cole, you didn't say anything about it. Mr. Hague, that. Mr. Cole, you did not tell me, Brent, I want you to file this. I don't care about anything else. We specifically talked about this. I specifically told you this. So every time we talked, you ultimately said, you're right. I don't think I want to lose my license for 5 years. And we talked about the fact that we had it down to 1 year. Mr. Hague responds, I'd like you to look at the spot where it says, that is what I wanted at the time, that is what I still want, because I feel they maliciously took that away from me. Mr. Cole replies, this is what I said. I mean, you know, I've got to deal with these people. But if you tell me that's the deal I want, I'm not stopping until I get it, I'm going to send you a letter saying that is absolute, that saying this is absolutely in my own mind crazy. But I will do it if you tell me. That's what I told you. You said, well, I'm not happy they took away my opportunity that I thought we had set away from me. Okay, and he's got this in quote. Mr. Cole is quoting me from the recordings. Okay, tell me right now, is that what you want me to do? Actually, he's quoting himself. Do you want me to go back and take the risk when you've got things in place? You said, you mean go back to the original agreement? Which, yes, a minimum one year. The plane is up for the judge to decide. Is that what the time, because I feel they maliciously, I say okay, you don't say anything, that's what I want to do. Brent, I want you to file a motion. And I reply, Mr. Haig replies, this is what I said at the time with the bar. Does anybody read where I say that is what I wanted at the time and that's what I still want? I then say, so what you're saying is that I could have laid out, I cooperated with the state from the beginning, gave them a five-hour interview, which led to over double the amount of charges filed against me, gave up guiding for an entire year, the money was already gone, the season was already over, which dang near bankrupt Jackie and I because we still had to pay all the leases and all the insurance and all the bonding, and we didn't get any income. Now that hurts. You're saying that a judge would have heard that and said, Mr. Leaders, and that's prosecutor leaders, you can just do whatever you want. You can promise this man the moon, and when he takes action and sacrifices his life, you can just go, and in this place is where my wife jumps in because I was pretty upset over losing my career and having my attorney saying that I never asked for something for my career being over. Ms. Shaw jumps in. I then say, okay, I'm sorry, you know, is that what you're saying, Mr. Cole, is that we've already had all the witnesses flown in from Illinois, Silver Salmon Creek, took my kids out of school, took people from work, came up here so they could all testify, and the judge would have listened to all that with what's called detrimental reliance, and she would have not required specific performance of that agreement. Mr. Cole, response to the Bar Association. I will tell you again, David, I told you before the hearing they were not going to allow you to plead open sentences to the first charges and go and be able to get your plane back. I respond to the Bar Association. You still, could you answer my question that the judge would have listened and that would have been the end of it? Mr. Cole replies, I really don't think the judge would have done anything, David. That is your version. Scott Leaders would have stood up and said, I don't know what he's talking about. I represent the state of Alaska. We make the charging decisions. We don't have any deal like that. And then your judge would have said to me, okay, then we're going to have briefing on that. And then at your direction, I would have filed my affidavit, and he would have filed his, and all of a sudden, where would that have gotten us? And I replied to Mr. Cole, and while you're under oath, and on record here before the Alaska Bar Association, going to tell me that when I tell you that is what I wanted at the time and that is still what I want, that I said no? Mr. Cole replies to the Bar Association, I'm going to tell you that if you read this whole thing, it doesn't say I want you to reject every offer and go in and do whatever you've got to do to get this original deal. David, that's what I'm going to tell you. If you read this from front cover to back, you will not get that sense. I reply to the Bar Association. So when I tell you, quote, well, to me, they weren't viable options, unquote. And this is a recording of me and Brent Cole talking while he was still my attorney. I told him they weren't viable. There were no other viable options to me. That was my statement to him while he was my attorney. Then I say, that means there were options that were viable? Is that what you're telling me? Mr. Cole responds to the Bar Association, I can't speak for what you're thinking, David. You were not half the time rational in my mind. I respond, so you can look at these. And Ms. Shaw jumps in here and she says, Mr. Haig, I think you've covered this one enough. And I say, I've hit that one enough. Ms. Shaw says, I think you have. And I say, okay. So That is the...
Let me ask you a couple questions, so I want to make sure that I understand the context, okay? If I'm understanding what you're saying is that you believe that you had, and this is a question, that you had what, either a deal worked out with the state, and did that deal, in your mind, include transactional immunity?
I believe so. At the time, I didn't know what transactional immunity meant. I hired attorneys. And so now it gets difficult for me.
Just tell me what you think happened. You think you got transactional immunity?
My attorney, no, I never got it. But I believe I had it because that man and a person who worked for him testified under oath that Scott Leaders gave me transactional immunity.
You think that your lawyers told you that the state gave you transactional immunity?
They did testify that that is exactly what happened.
And so what were you getting in exchange for this transaction? What was the state getting in exchange for the transactional immunity? Usually transactional immunity means the person receiving is going to will not be prosecuted in exchange for giving some sort of testimony. The testimony that you'll be given can't be used against you. So
I have no idea. That's why, because I was a pilot and a master big game man, I didn't know any of this. Now when I look
Listen to my question. You can't answer my question until you hear it. Was there an agreement in writing? Was there an offer in writing?
Nope. Mr. Cole says he was working on his own and he didn't need anything in writing.
Who do you believe representing the state made the offer?
Scott Leaders.
And roughly when was that?
It would have been sometime in either June, July, August, somewhere in there of 2004.
Okay. And when is it that you believe that your attorney or someone working with your attorney told you that there was this offer?
Of immunity?
Yeah.
It was when I filed fee arbitration against him. And
so after the case,
exactly.
Criminal case is over. Okay.
Yeah.
So.
At the time, they said.
Just wait. I'm trying to understand the sequence. You've been living with this, and I haven't. So I want to make sure that I have the sequence right.
Well, thank you.
You did not enter any kind of a plea agreement. You went to trial, and later you learned what you think had been an offer that had been communicated or worked out between the lawyers, between the two lawyers, the state and Mr. Cole?
No, everything was worked out. What happened is Mr. Cole told me I was required to go give a statement to the prosecution before trial. So I did.
Wait a minute. Before trial?
Yep.
You gave a statement to the prosecution?
Yes.
And what were you told was the purpose of giving this statement?
Mr. Cole said, you're required to go in. And I said, okay. I don't know what the ramifications were.
This is before the trial?
Yes. And that's why when that was put to the Bar Association, Mr. Cole said, the reason why I had you do this is you were given transactional immunity.
Now, in the testimony or the questioning in the bar thing, there's talk about a filing of a motion. What motion?
I don't know.
Well, then why are you handing this to me? You seem to think this means something, so help me out.
With the Bar Association, what it means is that at the time I wanted a plea agreement enforced.
What plea agreement?
The one that Mr. Cole made for me that said open sentencing.
What were the terms of the plea agreement?
Open sentencing on AS, whatever they were, would allow 1 year guide license suspension. And we were going to present evidence that it should be a 1 year guide license suspension.
Well, hang on. What were you going to plead to?
I don't know, Mr. Cole. Well,
you're the one who
AS 15.
You're the one who wanted the deal. What is it that you thought the deal was? What was the proposal? You plead to something, and you get something. So what were you going to plead to?
I was going to plead to AS, whatever, 17
or
720.
If you can't
it would allow a one-year
If you can't remember, I don't need you to remember the precise
statute. I have the charging information, so I could get the exact citation.
Tell me. Go ahead. You've got it. Tell me what it is that you...
I know that the petitioner is a pro per litigant and will be given wide discretion and wide latitude on the form of his questioning, but there is a witness on the stand that should be answering questions posed to him. The petitioner will have an opportunity to take the stand and testify, but Mr. Cole's time is valuable, and so while he's on the stand, I think the question should be directed to him. The state objects to the form of the question.
And
give me the statute.
The AS 8.54.720A8A.
AS 08.54.720A8A.
Correct.
Okay. So what class of a crime is that?
It's like...
it's a class A.
A misdemeanor?
Yes.
Okay. And so you, I want to be clear, you think that somebody from the state said to you, you plead to that misdemeanor, open sentencing?
Correct.
How was that communicated to you?
Mr. Cole told me he ran it by Mr. Leaders, and Mr. Leaders agreed to it.
Okay. So did you go in and enter a plea?
Nope.
And why not?
Because after those charges were filed and we flew everybody in from around the country, when we drove to Anchorage to Mr. Cole's office, he said, I got bad news for you. Scott Leaders just changed the charges. The day before we were supposed to plea out on November 9th, on November 8th, Scott Leaders filed an amended information changing the charges that would require me to be sentenced to at least a three-year suspension of my guide license when the original charges were down to whatever. They would allow a one-year or even less, I believe. I'm not sure on that. All I know is they were far less severe than what Scott Leaders changed at the last minute, and Mr. Cole said he could do nothing to enforce.
Okay, so, and was the original proposal ever reduced to writing?
No.
Okay, and so there was a change of plea hearing schedule?
Yep.
And the day before the change of plea schedule, Mr. Cole tells you that things have changed?
Yep.
And Leaders is not going to... honor what you believe had been the terms of the agreement. And
Mr. Cole said that he could not believe that it happened, that he had a binding plea agreement, and then, well, he said binding agreement, and then he said, I can't do anything to enforce it because, quote, unquote, I can't do anything to piss Leaders off because I still have to be able to make deals with him after your case is finished.
Okay. So, did you guys go into court the next day?
Nope. Mr. Cole said we can't go in. Right. We telephonically entered a plea of not guilty.
Okay. And the terms of the agreement, as far as what you're telling me, is that particular charge, misdemeanor, open sentencing, so the judge would have had discretion between 0 and 1 year in prison, right? And whatever the range and the fine is.
Yeah.
And whatever sort of...
Okay.
And whatever sort of forfeiture of licensing or planes that the statute allows.
Correct.
Okay. And I'm not familiar with the statute off the top of my head. Was there does the statute include something that says there can be a license forfeiture for up to 1 year, up to 5 years, or up to 10 years? Is there anything like that?
I'm sure there is.
You know?
It was between 1 and 3 years.
That's what the statute says?
Yeah. That was what the agreement was going to be.
Okay. So let me hear from Mr. Cole about what he currently can tell us about what the agreement had been.
Okay. So it's been a long time.
I understand.
We're talking 15 years. But what David has left out a little bit here is the condition that he was in when he was originally, the search warrants were originally served on him. That happened in April of 2004. He was a big game guide. He had 6 to 8 brown bear hunters that were scheduled, that he was scheduled to take out that spring. And to him, is my recollection, those were $15,000 to $20,000 hunts. And he had just been searched. His wife was in town. They had gone to his house. They'd searched his lodge. And they'd found evidence supporting the claims that Mr. Haig had killed some wolves. And that was an investigation that Trooper Gibbons was engaged in. At that time, the state had just started wolf hunting again, and the governor had gone out, I thought, on a limb to allow aerial wolf hunting, which was a very unpopular thing in some parts of the country and the state. And when David came in with his wife, he was shocked, maybe, couldn't understand how they could do this and what could happen.
You say came in, you mean came into your office to talk to you about what happened?
He came into my office. Actually, he went to Kevin first, and Kevin couldn't handle him, so Kevin called me, asked me to handle David, and he took Mr. Zellers.
And I said, can I ask who Kevin is?
Kevin Fitzgerald.
Okay.
So, just looking at the case, Judge, it was a bad case.
Bad case meaning bad for the defendant or bad for the state?
Bad for the defendant. And,
okay.
And the
All right,
thing that's... you have to understand at the time, it's not the case now, but the real motivator behind all this is under AS 0854-605, at that time, if a guide got a sentence on any kind of a hunting or federal state hunting charge and received a fine of more than $1,000, then they automatically lost their right to reapply to be a guide for 5 years. And I had just, no, I don't know whether I had or not, but I had dealt with this issue many times, and I had a sentencing, but I think it was later I had a sentencing. But anyway, so, I mean, fish and game cases get a $1,000 fine for nothing. You know, with Bristol Bay, they give $2,500 fines without a blink for strict liability. And this case was going to go over a $1,000 fine. There was no doubt if he went in open sentencing. But the critical thing is when David came in, he had these hunters coming in. And so he wanted me to make sure that he could get and service all these hunters that he had in the spring of 2004. Well, the state, I had to go to the state to do that because they could have charged him immediately. And if they had charged him, they could have gotten a bail condition that he not provide these services, I thought. I could be wrong.
They cannot put you out of business until you're convicted.
Wait. Let him finish his answer. I'll give you a chance to talk when I want to hear from him.
So I was concerned about that. The other thing is, and I can't remember whether they took the plane at that time or not. And David would know that because the plane is very special to him. I can't remember what the deal was with that. But in order for us, in my own mind, because I looked at the evidence, I talked to David, he admitted killing the wolves. There were 6. He admitted taking them. He had falsified documents as a guide. That was the worst thing you could do. He'd reported that they were taken while he was trapping. That was a lie. I knew from my experience, and I've done this with more guides than anybody, that lies by guides can be career-ending because, you know, we hold our guides to such high standards. So I knew that there were big issues in his mind, and he wanted to save his guide business. So I went to leaders, and we struck a deal that he wouldn't file, that David would be able to do this, but he wanted to know where the location, he wanted a statement. And he wanted to know the location of where the wolves were shot. We kind of got through that period. That was in April and May. And David was allowed...
So he gave, this is the statement that he's talking about. He went and gave some sort of statement to the state.
Yes.
And part of the purpose of that was to delay the charging and certainly the resolution of the of any sentence until after the upcoming hunt season.
Because in my opinion, I've been doing this for a long time, there's a couple ways you handle these cases. One of them, you say, screw you. Knock yourself out, state. Bring your charges. We'll be in trial. But then you have a more difficult time getting a deal later on. On the other hand, if you come forward, you give them a good faith proffer, you work with them, you show contrition, you take some time off, you have the ability to work a better deal at the end. And that was always what my goal was. My goal was to get him back to guiding as soon as I could. That's what he wanted.
But at least the interim arrangement was give the statement and delay charging and certainly delay resolution and thus complete the whatever it was 6, 7, 8, 10 the planned hunts, the scheduled hunts.
Yes.
Okay. Was there anything in writing that said, you know, in exchange for this statement you get X, Y, and Z?
There wasn't at the time. And that
there was not.
There was not at the time. And that, you know, I should have done a better job on that. There's no doubt about that. However, I did, when David fired me, Chuck Robinson called me, and he said, hey, what about that statement? And I said, well, you know, he had King for a day. Now, that's not my
understanding. Okay, what's that mean? Can you tell me what that means, please?
Use of immunity.
Just let me take a note here, so hang on.
That's not transactional immunity. I don't remember ever saying transactional immunity. You're going to have to show me that, David. In fact, I wrote just exactly the opposite. So I wrote a letter to Scott Leaders after David fired me, and I confirmed that David had use immunity, what we call king for a day use immunity, for the interview that he gave back in April. And I never heard anything other than that. I was
the problem is
just wait. You thought that the state agreed not to utilize whatever Hague said in this statement against him?
Yeah.
Okay. But that was, again, not in writing?
Not in writing.
All right. So then when Hague fires you, Mr. Robinson takes over. Robinson contacts you to talk about what the status of the situation is.
He contacts me about the same thing David's talking about. Should we file this motion to enforce? What about this interview? Was he, you know, there was something there, and I was like, well, yeah, of course it was. It was king for a day, and that's what I wrote.
Can I say something, please?
Just a minute. So that's in the testimony in front of the Bar Association when you were talking with Mr. Hague about whether you ever instructed somebody to file a motion. It's the motion to enforce what you thought was whatever kind of agreement the state had given you that prompted you to give the statement, right?
We also gave up a year of guiding after that. We did the spring bear hunts, and then Mr. Cole says we got this deal, cancel all your fall bear hunts and moose hunts, and we did. And so we gave up a whole year, and those hunts would have occurred in September and October. Mr. Cole's billing statement shows that he billed me for open talking to the prosecutor for open sentencing in August. We did not guide for September and October.
You guided,
and then in November, they changed the deal.
In April is when the search occurred?
Yes.
And did you have bear hunts scheduled for you know, May, June, July, August?
Just August, April.
Is that
April,
I'm sorry, in April?
Yes.
And did you do those hunts?
Yes.
And so there, he said something, there, I don't know what he said, 6-8 hunts that had been scheduled at the time of the search warrant? Was that roughly right?
Yeah.
And did you do those hunts?
Yes.
Okay. And then there were some fall
hunts.
And we
made a plea agreement in August, and we canceled our September and October guiding season in reliance on that plea agreement, and then it was broken and nobody enforced it, and I know that is now wrong on so many levels, it's unbelievable. And something else I want to state.
Slow down.
Is that
David,
okay,
wait. Wait. I'm trying to help you here. You've been living this for whatever it is, 15 years. You know this inside and out. Okay? You have to slow down and let me understand the context of what you're talking about. If you don't do that, you're going to lose me, and I'm not going to understand. So I need you to help me understand what's going on. So let me explain to you where I'm a little bit confused so you can clarify my confusion, all right?
Just wait.
When did you think you got this deal about delaying, you know, the 1 year of no hunting?
In it would have been July, August.
So you think it's sometime in July and August of 2004, you
this,
got
in August he billed me for talking with the prosecutor for an open sentencing plea agreement.
When did you think you made some agreement that meant that you had to give up guiding for a year? Sometime in July and August?
Yes.
And when would the year would have started in July or August?
Yes. I'd like to say
and
something.
And when did you get? When did you have Mr. Cole stop representing you?
I think it would have been about maybe December of November is when the shit hit the fan. Scott changed the charges. Probably December. I could dig that up.
Okay, you said.
I would like to. Can I just get one thing out before I lose my composure?
I don't want you to lose your mind.
Okay, can I get something out?
Sure.
Okay. The statement that I went in and gave that everybody, even Scott Leaders, agree it was given. You know, the state obviously doesn't agree that I had transactional immunity, even though people have testified. But Scott Leaders agrees I had immunity according to Evidence Rule 410, which means any statement, anything given for in the course of plea negotiations shall not be used in any civil, administrative, or legal proceeding, period. The charges that I went to jury trial on quoted my statement and forced me into trial. Chuck Robinson protested it. The state never did shit, never did anything about it, and I was going to say shit, and I'll retract that.
I've heard that before.
And the map that I made during my statement was the primary exhibit against me at trial. And so you understand how egregious that was. The map I made for a statement for a minor plea agreement was used against me at trial, and they took my guide license for life. And that's why I'm so angry, is it's 15 years down the road, and I don't have another life.
Stop.
I can't rewind the clock back and have another life. Mine's gone.
I'm sorry you think that. I mean, I understand why you're upset, but if you think that your life is over, you're wrong.
Okay.
I just want to correct one thing. You're talking about the motion that David wanted to have filed.
Right.
That all has to do with the enforcement of the plea agreement that he thought we had prior to the sentencing. The transactional stuff never came up while I was there, number one. And number two, I told Mr. Robinson, his investigator called me, tape recorded me. I talked to Chuck Robinson. I told him, look, if you guys want to file the motion, go ahead. I said, they had the opportunity to file.
The motion that you're talking about, you said go ahead, was to...
So
that to govern the use of the statement Haig had given? No?
No, it has nothing to do with that.
Okay.
It only has to do with the plea, what agreement was in place in September of 2004. We had been negotiating a deal because, in my own mind, the state was very clear they were going to suspend Dave's license for a significant period of time. And I was working on getting that down as much as possible. I thought, they initially said 5 years, 3 years, I don't know, I can't remember. I just remember that when we originally talked, we finally got it to a period where I got to argue not more than 1 year, that the judge should impose 1 year, and he was going to argue that the judge should impose a 3 year. And that had some small jail component that he was going to, is my recollection.
So you think that it's somewhere in September-ish, fall of 04.
August, September, we always talk, you know,
right,
on the phone.
But yeah. To somewhere around that time period, you had an agreement with leaders that would have him plead to something.
Yes.
And you got to argue for no more than a year.
Yes.
Of license expenditure, and the state got to argue for 3 to 5, more than 1 year.
And the whole thing was couched because in those days you had to your composite sentence, your jail time couldn't be more than 5 days, because if it was, then you would lose your license for 5 years on any count, and it couldn't be for more than $1,000 on any count. This is the old ASO 854.
So the component that would allow this argument by you that he get no more than 1 year necessitated that he receive no more than 5 days and no more than $1,000 fine.
On every count. Yep. But again, the whole focus, the whole time for 6 months leading up to this was, I don't want to lose my guide license. And I understood that. That's what I do. I represent guides, and I help them keep their licenses. So, we knew early on,
I understand what you're trying to get at, but what I don't understand is, you think you had an arrangement with leaders?
Okay, I'll explain.
To allow this open sentencing?
No.
That.
Oh, just a partial open sentence.
Right.
Okay. So then, what happens? As part of that deal. So
did you have something in writing?
No, we never had anything in writing.
But you think you had an oral agreement with leaders?
Yeah.
Tell me what the component of the agreement was.
There was some suspended time, small amounts of jail time, fines.
Below 5 days,
below that. The critical thing was we were pleading to a crime, a big game violation that allowed us to argue 1 year, loss of license, and they got to do 3. But the other kicker in this thing is David had this favorite plane of his that the troopers had seized, because that was the plane that was used to kill the wolves. And he'd put a lot of money into it and a lot of time. And they wanted to forfeit that, which in my experience, they were going to win. I've represented guides and outfitters who've lost and given up airplanes, boats, rifles, whatever. When they commit illegal acts, the state forfeits their stuff. So that was a problem for David. He did not want to lose that airplane. And he told me that. And I kept telling him, David, you can get another plane, but you are not going to win on this forfeiture. And he said, well, I want you to run it by leaders and see if he will allow me to argue open sentencing. Just go in and plead guilty to this charge and plead open sentencing. Now, I have a problem with prosecutors that won't do that. I've always had a problem with that, Judge. I was a prosecutor. I kind of figure if your deal isn't going to stand up to a judge open sentencing, then as a prosecutor, you know, you got a problem. But leaders, so initially, Scott
said, he refused that.
No, initially he said yes over the phone. And then David's right. When we were getting ready to go out and do this sentencing, he called up and said, I'm not going to do that. The troopers have vetoed this. They don't want to give him they don't want to have the option of getting the plane back.
The problem is that I gave up my guide year in the interim, and they can't do that after I have placed detrimental reliance on it.
Stop.
But this happened in, like, August. I mean, I don't know what he's talking about, this detrimental reliance. All this happened in, like, August, and we went into sentencing. But anyway, so I was unhappy with this, Judge, okay? And I told David that, and he had all those people there. I got on the phone that night, and we worked out a different deal. And that deal would have given David his guide license back 16 months from the date of the events. He would have been guiding he was getting his license back in July of 2005. He was only going to miss one season under my deal, which David agreed to. We agreed to the jail time.
I never agreed to that.
Just wait.
We sat in the room that night in my office with your friends, and we made a deal with Scott Leaders. That's what I thought. Maybe David doesn't think that. I apologize for that. But we had an understanding.
Was Leaders in the room, or is he on the phone?
No, he's on the phone.
Is it active negotiation with Leaders on the phone and him there, or is it you're on the phone, you talk to him?
David's in one of my other conference rooms. I'm in my office. We're talking. And then I'm going back and forth.
And what do you think was the ultimate result of that negotiation?
I thought we had a deal whereby David, we were going to be able to argue 1-3. No, excuse me. That was what it was going to be, and that's why we were calling the witnesses. What it was going to be was that he would get his license back in 16 months. It was going to be like July 1st, 2005.
16 months after the Wolf kill.
Yep. And that's why I had encouraged. We knew David wasn't going to guide the other part of this.
Anything about the plane?
And the plane was going to be forfeited. Yeah.
Did you guys, you thought you had an agreement between Mr. Hague and the state. Did you guys, you know, set a change of plea, start to effectuate that deal?
I have a hard time remembering exactly what happened after that. Mr. Leaders changed the plea, amended the charges so that David couldn't come in and plead guilty at the hearing the next day or 2 days later or whatever. The next day, I think it was going to be. Or he filed that maybe a day or two before. But we had an agreement that was going to allow David to get his guide license in 16 months.
So what happened to that deal?
And what happened to that deal? If he had just listened to me, he would have been done. But what happened was...
What happened is
then,
I didn't agree to it.
Speak. Then you can speak.
Then...
You're not going to be rude and obnoxious during this thing, all right?
I'm sorry. It just...
But just hold your tongue for a while. That's all I'm asking you. You're doing pretty well.
Okay.
I just want you to continue doing well.
Okay.
Then this issue with the plane came up. And David came to me and said, well, look, I want that plane back. And he said, how about I have a Super Cub? Let's switch the Super Cub for the PA-12. And I said, well, actually, that makes a lot of sense. This PA-12, the troopers can't use that. It's not worth anything to them. They'd get a Super Cub. They use Super Cubs all the time. That makes sense. That was a good idea, I thought. And so I floated that by Scott Leaders. And he said, he came back and said no. And I'm like, really? We could get this thing all done. And he said no. So I told that to David. And that turned into, in my opinion, the reason why David fired me. He lost confidence in me. He wanted to file this motion. He was never happy that, and from my perspective, Judge, just so that you know, I never wanted David to go into an open sentencing situation. And I repeatedly told David, don't do anything where you're going to go in open sentencing. You're a guide. All the judge has to do is one of two things.
Right. 6 days, $1,001.
Over $1,000, or suspend your, revoke your license, your hunting license. I mean, just revoke your license for 5 years and you're not going to guide. That you had so many downsides to an open sentence. And I told him that, and we'd have these conversations. David's right. He'd come in. He'd bring his friend. They'd argue, oh, we want to file this. And then we'd talk, and he'd say no. No, I get it.
So the bottom line, though, is that the Leaders was willing to do the 16-month license suspension, insisted on the forfeiture of the particular plane used for the wolf kills, and as a result, Mr. Haig said, I'm not pleading to that.
He ultimately said that. He hired Chuck Robinson.
Okay, I mean,
they got to
get rid of you.
Yeah, he fired me, and
okay,
and he could have filed all those motions, and he could have done all that.
Okay, so, Mr. Haig, I get it. I see your hand. You're being very polite. Do you disagree with that recitation of the progression of the negotiations?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, so you tell me how you differ.
A, on November 9th, nobody agreed that there was deal, including Mr. Cole. In fact, all the witnesses that were there, we were all incredibly angry that Scott Leaders had pulled the rug out from under us at the last minute after we'd given up our fall guide season, after I'd flown everybody in.
He said, okay,
yes,
he said
no,
November,
no, wait.
But he means September 9th.
So, which is what?
So
me,
there was,
Mr.
there
Haig,
never was a deal
Mr. Haig,
after that.
Before
and
that, Mr. Haig, listen to me, this is critical. When you walked in the day before and you gather all your witnesses to come in here to do what you think was going to be an opening sentencing, and that's why you had the witnesses, because you were going to convince the judge that you were a hell of a great guy and you should not lose your livelihood. Okay, that was the whole goal, right? So what did you think on the eve of that hearing was the deal?
We go in, be open sentencing, and it'd be between 1 and 3 years on my guide license, and the plane would be up in the air.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, and
let's stop. Just let me write that down. So, it was possible that you would have had your license suspended for more than a year, up to 3.
Correct.
And also that you might have lost the plane that you used for the wolf kill.
Correct.
Okay. So,
can I say something?
Just wait. So, I'm trying to understand your comment about detrimental reliance, because you said that you stopped hunting for a year, but you possibly could have lost your sentence, you lost your license for up to 3 years.
But we had already given that year up, and it was gone. And I never even got credit for it. The U.S. Supreme Court says if a defendant, prior to being sentenced, or in reliance on a prosecution's deal, an offer that you agree to, so it's a plea agreement, it's a Rule 11 plea agreement, If you put detrimental reliance on it, you get that deal, not some other deal that they cook up later. Judge, the 16 months. You don't get that deal.
I understand.
You get the deal you agreed to at the time, and that's why I have a problem, is I gave up the guiding for this deal, not some other deal that supposedly happened after November 9th. I gave it up for this deal.
If you agreed to it.
I agreed to it.
Okay. And you could have lost.
He told me that Scott Leaders agreed to it. I gave up guiding. And then come the date that we're supposed to go get sentenced, and they said, no, there's no deal. He changed the charge. He wants you to throw in the plane. And this is why upset.
Okay. Now, listen to this question.
Can I say one thing, please?
Yes, you can answer my question.
Please, Your Honor.
No. So he reneged on the eve of the deal.
Correct.
Mr. Cole said that there was then additional negotiations. Were there negotiations?
He started doing all kinds of stuff. I said, I want this deal. And he's like, well, I got this, I got that. I'm like, I don't want those deals. I want this one that I agreed to prior.
Okay. You wanted the old deal.
Can I get...
No, just listen to my question. Did he say to you, I've got a revised deal, the 16 months from the Wolfkill date?
Yeah, he said, I've talked to Scott, and we got all this revised stuff. Then I asked him, I'm like, can Scott Leaders change the deal again a second time after I agree to give him the airplane? And he says, well, I don't think he'll do that. In other words, he led me to believe that Scott already got a year of guiding out of me, changed the deal after the year's gone. Now Mr. Cole wants me to give him an airplane and tells me that after he has the airplane, he can change the deal and ask for my house or my kids. And I'm like, I'm not doing it.
I'm glad you didn't give up your kids.
Well, how can you give a prosecutor something and have him break the deal and then ask for something else, and your attorney says that he can do that? Tell me how that's possible.
Did you agree to the 16 months post-Wolfkill suspension?
No, I did not.
Okay. You agreed to nothing after the open sentence 1 to 3 year proposal?
That's exactly right.
Okay. Was there a discussion about exchanging the plane used for the Wolfkill with the Super Cub?
There was. I talked about
did
that.
Did you make that proposal?
I did.
So you were proposing additional terms that you had not originally agreed to?
We talked about that, but then when Mr. Cole said that if we did anything new, Mr. Leaders could still break another deal, then I was not talking about any more deals.
My point is that you had come to what you thought was an agreement, and then you wanted to change at least the plane forfeiture, where you would exchange not the one that you would forfeit, not the one you used on the Wolfkill, but instead...
I did not agree to a deal. I said, would they be willing at...
You made a proposal. That's simply what I'm asking. You made a proposal, and you wanted Cole to explore that because you wanted to keep the one plane.
Correct. And
there was never an agreement to forfeit the Super Cup.
Correct.
All right.
And the key of this, Your Honor, is that at the time I knew nothing, but I knew that when Mr. Cole said Mr. Leaders could break the deal and ask for the plane after he'd already got the guide year, when we asked him if Mr. Cole could continue, or Mr. Leaders, excuse me, basically, we asked him if Mr. Leaders could continue breaking plea agreements after we pay for them. Mr. Cole says, well, I wouldn't worry about it. Well, he's not the one giving up the airplane and the guide year and everything else. Upon that, I knew that there no plea agreement.
Okay.
Mr. Leaders could say, we'll give you no jail time,
to be clear about one thing, and I need you to make sure that I understand this correctly. At the time when you thought you had a deal, when you brought all your witnesses and friends and your supporters in to testify, you thought the deal was open sentencing with a possibility of a suspension of your hunting license between 1 to 3 years.
Correct.
And whether or not the plane would be forfeited would be up to the judge. Correct?
Correct.
And the monetary fine, if any, and the jail sentence, if any, were open terms for the judge to decide.
Absolutely.
Okay. And that was the deal that you think should have been enforced?
Absolutely.
And should be enforced now?
No.
Okay. What would... Then what do we...
I've lost... How do you... Okay, Mr. Haig, you get
what do you want?
Year on your guide license. My guide license has been gone for 15 years now.
Mr. Haig, let's assume, just for purposes of discussion so I understand what we're doing here, I come to the conclusion that you had that deal and they reneged. Okay? What do you want, just a statement from me saying the state reneged?
I want
something else?
I want an order from your honor declaring my conviction overturned, and the state is free to charge me again, and we can start plea negotiating again, or we can go to trial.
Well, what the U.S. Supreme Court says, if you had a deal that the state reneges on, is you get the deal.
Not after you're convicted.
Well, maybe you're wrong about that.
I don't think so.
I beg to differ.
Because my deal
was
with charges far less severe than I have now. So what
you start at ground zero, where the suspension can be longer than 3 years? Why would you want
to? I want to go back, be unconvicted, and me and the state start fresh, because that's exactly what.
And what are you exposed to? What's the maximum suspension you're exposed to in your mind? If you go back to ground zero and lose.
I don't know. What if I win?
Well, then you get nothing. But if you lose, what do you think is the maximum exposure? Have you thought that through?
I don't know. I'm quite certain the state could charge me with first-degree murder, and I could go to jail for the rest of my life. So the exposure is pretty severe.
Let's try to be serious. I'm taking this seriously. I want you to take it seriously, too. On the charges that they have brought against you, on the various hunting violations, what do you think your exposure would be to a license suspension? Do you know? You don't know. All right. But you want to take that unknown risk rather than going back to the deal you thought you had.
Absolutely.
Okay. That's an interesting calculation.
What I want, Your Honor, and I think why everybody here, is we want to have a fresh, clean slate from the beginning without an attorney that lies to me that deals can't be enforced. And, you know, he's saying that the plane was seized and all this stuff happened. Every single warrant that was used to seize my plane falsified where the evidence was found to my guide area. And the whole reason, Your Honor, it was a guide crime is they said it was all found in my guide area. And all of that is a lie. They falsified this map. And there's a recording of the state talking about, before trial, falsifying the map. And they recorded themselves talking about that.
Help me with
so it should never have been a guide crime. We shouldn't be talking about a guide license suspension because...
Help me with something here. Did you not testify at trial that you acknowledged killing the wolves outside of the proper area?
Correct. I did.
Then...
The evidence that the state told me to shoot them there was removed out of the court record, and I do have a problem with that, because I work for a construction company now, and when the state inspector says me to go dig in this salmon stream, I go do it. And so when the state told me to kill the wolves where I did kill them there.
Mr. Haig,
it wasn't inside the open area, but the state official told me to kill them there. Then, to make it worse, they claim they're all in my guide area, so they can charge me as a guide, because they should... That's the reason they made it a guide crime. Otherwise, it would have been a violation of the Wolf Control Program, which to my career, my license, would have been like a traffic ticket. Nothing. They falsified everything to make it a guide crime. And that's why, you know, we're talking about this and that and the plea deal. I know that Mr. Cole lied to me when he said we couldn't attack the warrants that were all falsified. So I realize now the state, from the very beginning, manufactured a guide case, and we should never be talking about guide charges at all, because they gave me a permit to shoot wolves from the air. They told me where to shoot them. I went and shot them there. Then it was realized that that isn't an open area and that they weren't supposed to tell me there. Well, is that my fault that they tell me to go there, or is it their fault? And if that isn't in my guide area, it obviously ain't a guide crime. I don't have a client with me. But what they did is they said, rather than Mr. Haig killing the wolves here, and this is where the Wolf Control Program was happening, and half of it, he killed them over here. And since he's allowed to guide here, but he isn't allowed to guide here, we're going to charge him with career-destroying guide charges.
And all that was a lie, and we can prove it.
Okay.
That's why I'm upset, is it should never have been a guide problem to begin with.
Are you done?
Yes.
Do you have any questions? Do you have additional questions for Mr. Cole?
I do, if I may. Okay. Is it true you believe Governor Murkowski had called both my prosecutor and judge and told them to make an example of me?
I said that might be a possibility.
Okay. Is it true my plea agreement was never placed in writing because we were working alone?
What do you mean, working alone?
You stated exactly this in your deposition, page 141. You said the plea agreement was never placed in writing because we were working alone.
I don't remember making that statement, but
okay.
Sometimes
I'd like to point the court to page 141, Brent Cole's deposition.
You have that?
I do.
Show it to him.
Well, do you want it? Or
yes, if you're going to ask him about it, you need to show it to him.
Well, this is all record in the.
But he doesn't remember it, and he gets to look at it.
I want
you to show it to him.
Thank you. Do you have the next page?
I don't.
You have the full deposition?
I believe so.
Why don't you see if you can find it? This is a deposition, so it's not the bar?
No, this is a deposition
okay.
In this case.
And it's page 141?
Yep. Here's the whole thing.
Okay, thanks. I said that. I don't know why. I can't remember why I said that in the context.
Okay. And my next question is, what does that mean, working alone?
Try to answer it.
I just... doesn't make sense to me, so I don't know. The best I can say is I was trying to resolve the case for you. I was working with leaders. That's, you know, that was the best I can do. I was trying to do what you asked me to.
Is it true because you didn't get any writing, my family and I paid a very terrible price?
No. You could have done that. You could have enforce that through Mr. Robinson. I told you that.
The problem is Mr. Robinson said it's all water under the bridge with Mr. Cole, and I can't do anything.
Mr. Haig, be polite. When he's speaking, don't interrupt him. I won't let him interrupt you. I know you're upset about this, but you have to let him answer the question. So, continue your answer.
No, you fired me. I had a deal worked out for you. You could have gotten it. You would have been back in business in less than 16 months. And you chose to go a different direction, which was fine. You had the opportunity to, before the trial, to file all the motions and do whatever you wanted. And you hired an attorney to do that.
Your next question.
Is it true leaders, quote, changed the rules, unquote, to be sure he got the airplane?
He would not allow you to go open sentencing on the airplane. That's true.
He changed the rules, in other words.
No. He just, that was a statement that he made to me, and he came back and said that that wasn't going to happen. We took that in stride. We made another deal. You would have been back in business shortly.
So you would have never stated that leaders changed the rules?
Whether you say he changed the rules, he changed the deal, he told me originally that he would go open sentencing, which I told you not to do, and I, even to this day, I would tell you not to do it. You would have been convicted, and the same thing would have happened to you if you'd gone open sentencing. But you wanted it. I tried to get it. He said he would originally, and then he said no.
Okay, so you would have never stated that leaders changed the rules?
No, I might have said that.
Okay, so Scott Leaders changed the rules to be sure he got the airplane.
You have to ask him.
I want to know whether you stated.
I already told you I said that.
Okay. Is it true that with nothing in writing, leaders could keep changing the plea agreement over and over, however he wished to?
No, I don't believe that's true.
So if you were asked that and you said you didn't think that was a concern.
I didn't think it was a concern.
Is it true you told me to give up guiding for the plea agreement?
I did, because it was always known from the beginning you were going to lose your license for at least a year. And okay. Why not start it early and get it done? And it made it easier to negotiate with him.
Is it true leaders agreed to give me credit for this guide year if I gave it up before I was sentenced?
If you took the deal, yeah. What happened was, David, you didn't take the deal. Then you went and you got convicted. You got into an open sentence, which is what I told you not to do. And then the judge out in McGrath didn't give you credit for that time. That's not me. That's because you chose not to take the deal.
If the state testified at my sentencing that they had no idea why I gave up guiding for a year, would that be a true statement from the state?
I was under the understanding that they were going to be good with a year, not more than a year. You were going to lose your license for a year, and that you were going to get credit for that. Yes, we were going to make that argument, and I felt that they were going to agree to it.
In other words, Scott Leaders knew I was giving up the guide year for a plea agreement.
I don't know what Scott Leaders knew.
Did you ever tell Scott Leaders that I was giving up a guide year?
I told him that you weren't guiding in the fall of 2004, yes.
Did you tell him why?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so if he and Trooper Gibbons testified at my sentencing, they have no idea why I gave up guiding for a year, that means that they testified falsely?
I can't tell you what they testified to or whether they were false or
not.
Well,
the court record proves what happened. I'm just saying when they did so, they knew they were lying to the court.
I don't know.
Is it true leaders would only change the charges back if I also agreed to forfeit the airplane?
That's my recollection, yeah. And you agreed to it originally.
Is it true you told me you could not enforce the plea agreement because you could not do anything to piss leaders off as you still had to be able to make deals with him after my case was finished?
I said that
But what I meant was, what I do is I deal with prosecutors day in, day out. If they can't trust me and my word, then I can't get good deals going forward. I could always have enforced that, but as I always told you, David, why would you do that? Because then you are going to be in an open sentence situation, and you're going to lose your guide license for 5 years. And that's what you told me specifically you did not want to happen. So I was trying to make a deal, and I did, that got you your license in 16 months.
So when you said that you couldn't do anything to piss leaders off, as you still had to make deals with him after my case was finished, is it true that it was in your best interest and not mine to not enforce the plea agreement?
I thought it was in your best interest, David. Again, going into an open sentencing with the statute under ASO 854-605 was just suicide for a guide.
I'd like to point out to the court that Cole deposition, page 137, Cole admits that it was in his best interest not to enforce the plea agreement. Is it true that because of what leaders did concerning my plea agreement, you are going to be more careful in the future when dealing with him?
Absolutely. That's true. I didn't.
Is it true Robinson should have argued at sentencing that my guide license suspension should be ordered retroactive to reflect the time prior to sentencing I was not acting as a guide?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know what his strategy was at your sentencing.
Would you have ever stated this?
I don't know. I don't remember it.
Would you have? Is that something that you would now say, that Robinson should have tried to get credit for that year?
Well, it kind of makes sense to me, yeah.
Okay. Well, we have a record. You wrote a letter stating that Robinson should have argued at my sentencing that I should get credit to reflect the time that I was not acting as a guide.
You have that letter?
Yes. You want it?
You want to show it to him? Well, seems to me it's important to you, and you should probably put it into evidence. Do you want to ask him questions, or you just want to put the letter in?
Well, you said show him the letter.
If you're going to ask him questions about it, then show it to him. If you want to just put it in the record, go ahead and put it in the record.
I don't know where it is in here. Anyway, I don't need it in there. It's
well,
got it right
take
here.
Take
Ed
your
Ken,
time.
If you want.
Take your time, because if you just make a bald statement and you don't support it, that's going to hurt your case.
Well, I thought he testified that it would make sense that Robinson try to get...
You just made a representation that he said something in writing.
Okay. Well, here then.
So if you want to show it to him, that's fine.
Okay. And look at the front. This is from,
from
Marston Cole, and right here. And I guess, can you read that into the record?
Could you just give it the date of the letter and to who it was addressed?
So this is the grievance that David Haig filed against me with the Bar Association, and I had to write a letter response to them.
Okay. So can you give me the date of your response?
My response is March 30th, 2007.
Okay. And so, Mr. Haig, what's the section that you want him to read?
He's highlighted it, Judge.
All right.
Okay. So you agree? You
wait a minute. You asked me about filing to to get credit for your guiding, right?
Yep.
Well, this has to do with, I'm surprised Mr. Haig did not file motions to suppress the evidence at trial.
No, that's another part to it right here.
Show him the part that you think is pertinent.
I had it, and then he flipped by it.
Take your time and look for it. Let me just ask you a question. How much longer do you think your questioning of Mr. Cole is going to be?
Well, I need to get going here, so...
My question to you is, how long do you think it'll be? I'm trying to give people the time, chance to go to the bathroom. Are you going to be...
Just a couple minutes.
5 more minutes? Okay. Then we'll complete your questioning of him, and then we'll take a break. Mr. Haig, well, let me suggest this. Why don't we take the break now? You look in the document to see if you can find
one. Hold this. I'd like to get him
finished.
Do you want time to look for the document?
Sure. 3:30:07. Right here.
Just that part there.
So
you can just read it.
Let him look at it.
Okay.
And then when he's ready, I want him to identify the letter, the date of the letter, and to whom it is addressed.
This is the same letter, section 3, whether the suspension of Mr. Haig's guide license would be ordered retroactive to reflect the time prior to sentencing that Mr. Haig was not acting as a guide. And I wrote, this is simply a matter that is left to the discretion of the sentencing judge. Certainly Mr. Haig could have and should have made this argument at sentencing.
And my attorney never did, even though I asked him to. And...
So ask your next question.
Okay.
Is it true you could not file a motion to suppress my statement because the state had released it to the newspapers?
No.
I'd like to point out that Cole's deposition, page 26, he states that
him.
He could not file a motion to suppress my statement because...
Show it to him.
Okay. Right here.
I don't remember making that statement. That's what it says. What I said was right. A motion to suppress is for trial. What evidence gets presented at trial? I could have filed the motion to suppress your statement at trial, but you fired me, number one.
I'd like you to read this sentence right here.
I could not file a motion to suppress your statement because they distributed it to the newspaper. That doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. They took my statement that I gave up, and they issued it to the papers.
Ask your next question.
Okay. Well... Who typed this up?
Just curious.
It's by Transcription Support Services, 4782 Mills Drive, Anchorage, Alaska.
Okay.
Is Is it true you have testified under oath you were not my attorney when my statement was published in the Anchorage Daily News?
I don't remember testifying to that.
Okay. Well, it's in your, it's in the deposition. And in fact, Mr. Cole was my attorney when it was released to the Anchorage Daily News, and I have that. Can I submit it as evidence?
You have a document that you want to put into evidence?
Yes. And it's because Mr. Cole said he was not my attorney when it was published, when in fact it was. And so I believe that means he committed perjury in his deposition.
Help me out here. The Daily News published an article?
Huh?
The Daily News published an article about your...
And they quoted the state... They said the state charging document said Mr. Haig came in and said he admitted shooting wolves outside the area and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And so what happened is I made a statement for a plea agreement that then was released to the papers and it was published. And Mr. Cole said he was not my attorney at the time when in fact he was.
Is that what the article says?
Yes.
The article says that Cole was not the lawyer.
It doesn't say Cole. It says... Charging documents state Mr. Haig admitted shooting wolves outside the area. Right. Doesn't say anything about Cole.
So where's the statement that you think Cole made about him not being your lawyer?
In his deposition, page 20.
And what was the time period that he was referring to in the deposition?
He stated that he was not my attorney when... That was published in the Anchorage Daily News. It was published in the Anchorage Daily News November 10th, 2004, and I didn't fire Cole until December of 2004. So anyway.
Just hang on.
Okay.
Let me just make sure I understand the context. The article comes out in, what did you say? November 10th, and sometime in the article, sometime later, he makes a statement at the time of the article coming out, he was not your lawyer.
Correct.
And you think that was a false statement because you fired him after the article came out.
Correct.
Okay. When did you fire him?
It was in December of 2000. It was well after the 9th because that's when the plea agreement fell through, was November 9th. The article came out in the paper the next day. Because they had filed the new charges, and then it was like another month.
How did you fire him? Did you write him a letter?
There's
some document that says,
I have billing statements that I think prove when he was still representing him.
Did he move to withdraw?
I think I talked to my business attorney, Dale DeLifka, and he said I should fire him and find a new attorney.
Right, but there's a process for that, and that would make us, that would know for sure when he did it.
I guess, Mr. Cole, were you still my attorney on November 10th, 2004, the day after we were supposed to plea out in McGrath?
You keep saying that as November 10th. My recollection is it was in September and that we had meetings for the next 2 months. Ultimately, I think you fired me in December.
Correct. So you would have still been my attorney in November, November 9th.
I would think so, yeah.
Okay. So that's why I believe, and I have the billing statements and a copy of the Anchorage Daily News article here.
Do you want those to go in the record?
Sure. Okay.
Mark them as the next exhibits, whatever they are. And staple each package, please. So give her a moment to do that, and then, Madam Clerk, let us know.
And I'm basically, I think, about done.
Okay, just hang on. So the article is one exhibit?
Yes, and that's number 4.
So the article is number 4, and the
statement.
The some sort of statement from a deposition?
Number 5.
Is number 5. All right. The article is number 4, statement number 5. You have another question?
Is it true that you have testified that my killing the wolves where the state told me to was not a legal defense?
We discussed that And I do not think it was a legal defense.
Okay.
I think I probably told you that.
Okay. Well, your deposition, page 45, Mr. Cole testified that my killing the wolves where the state told me to was no defense, or was not a legal defense to the state charging me with killing them where I killed them. Is it true your tactic for defending me was to have me, quote, fall on my sword, unquote?
Yeah, that's right, because you were a mess. You used to call me up crying from your house, and your mother-in-law called me crying and said you were a wreck, and that if we didn't do something, you were going to go crazy. And so, yes, I went out of my way, and I had you fall on your sword so that you could have your bear hunting season, and you could get through that, and we could work out a resolution after everything had died down.
Is it true that, quote, fall on your sword, unquote, means you commit suicide?
It's a term of art. It doesn't mean that. No.
That's all I have for Mr. Cole.
Will you have questions?
Yes.
How long will your questions?
Long enough that we should take a break.
All right. So we'll take a break until, let's say, quarter till.
Please rise. Court standing recess.